What in God's Name is in Summer Replay. Please enjoy our top conversations from this program year.
Where liberalism comes off the tracks for me is that place where, you know, we're not going to be bound to some higher ideal. How dare you even suggest it? Because in the context of the Jim Wallace, Senator Coons conversation, it sort of came up a little bit when they started talking about why it is that Democrats don't discuss faith.
Yes.
Welcome to What in God's Name, the podcast of the S1 Project. She is Shayna Appel.
And he is Chris Owen.
Our mission is to promote moral and theological reflection and moral and theological lenses to see more deeply and more clearly into our shared common life.
We are attempting to free much of the conversation that takes place in the public square these days from the polarizing binaries of politics and economics, which only because of the way they're discussed in our world today to tremendously limit our capacity to get to real human flourishing, the things that really make our lives tick and give them meaning.
To truly ground conversations about our shared common life in moral philosophy, moral thinking, and theology is a difficult thing to do because our default position is, again, to use these lenses of economics and politics. Because of that, we have a spinny wheel, which we spin at the beginning of our show, and it gives us an opportunity to talk about a core value or key idea that underpins the kinds of conversations that the S1 Project promotes and that What in God's Name is an example of. So,
I think in the interest of full disclosure, we should be upfront about the fact that we believe that we can disagree for good. That too often right now, bound as they are by the binaries of politics and economics, disagreement is not good. Disagreement is not productive. But conflict is a healthy and natural byproduct of democracy, and we must be able to disagree, but to do it respectfully and for the greater good. So there you have it.
You know what, Shayna? I agree with that. I would hope I agree with that.
Yeah, because you wrote it. Yeah. Is it my turn to give it a spinny today, Chris?
It is. The spinny wheel has landed on the S1 Project, which is appropriate, Shayna, because I received an email recently from one of our supporters saying, what is the S1 Project? Because we've been saying for so long that What in God's Name, our podcast, is a podcast that has a project. And now we finally named the project. But what is S1? You want me to say?
Well, I will start by, again, in the interest of full transparency, Chris came up with the name S because S is the letter you put on words to be plural. One because one is a singular number. One is the... And the combination of those things, we talk about not getting stuck in binaries. So S1 is both the plural and the singular project. And the project came out of a conversation we were having in the podcast, which was that if Chris and I were the only two people doing the talking, there was very low likelihood of getting to the goal, which is to transform how conversation is being done.
That's well said. S1 is a play. Another way to think of it is it's a shorthanded way of saying e pluribus unum, from the many one. Mm-hmm. The S1 Project, you can go to our website, s1project.org, and you will see, just as Shayna was alluding to, that now we have an educational component with some educational initiatives where we're inviting other people to have these kinds of conversations. And in fact, on that website, you'll find an example of one of these kinds of conversations that I had recently with four high school students. One of our visions is that we're going to reach out to high schools and community colleges. So check out the S1 Project at our website, s1project.org.
There's a lot of really good information there. And also, if you have a group that you think would be interested in participating, you'll find the information there and how to reach out to us. We are looking for groups to sit down and have these conversations with. So, you know, if you have a group of people who just want to try it, try this thing and see, you know, if it's got legs, if it's something they can wrap their heads around, please do reach out to us.
We're not a bridge building organization. There's a ton of bridge builders. We're explorers. We're not, as I extend the metaphor, it's not about a bridge kind of spans a gap.
Between two known points.
Between two known points. Beautiful.
Right.
That's extending the metaphor even further than I thought. What we want to do is not span that gap to two known points, but rather to take the expedition down into the gap. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I love that.
Yeah. There's the tone that indicates it's time for us to move away from our spinny wheel topic to our topic of the day. A wonderful interview that was held with Senator Chris Coons from the great state of Delaware at Georgetown University's Center on Faith and Justice.
You can find this conversation between Jim Wallace and Senator Chris Coons on YouTube at the website of the Georgetown University Center on Faith and Justice. So it's on YouTube. I highly recommend it. The title of this talk is called Higher Calling, a conversation about faith and politics with Senator Chris Coons. Shana, the reason I wanted to tell you, and also then, of course, to tell our listening community about how this thing came across my radar screen.
How did it come across your radar screen, Chris?
A friend of mine sent it to me, knowing the work that the S1 Project does. A friend of mine sent it to me and said, you should look at this. And I am naturally suspicious when I receive stuff like this, because oftentimes when people talk or attempt to have conversations about faith and politics, most of the time, my experience is what they really want to talk about is politics. And faith is a window dressing, or faith is backfill. The real interest is let's talk about the hot topic of whatever's hot on the political scene. So I was skeptical, and my friend, I shared this with my friend because he's a friend I can share these things with. And he wrote back and said, no, you really need to look at this. And I did, and I was...
And you were not disappointed.
And I was not disappointed. And I wrote him back and I said, thank you for insisting that I look at this.
You know, one of the things that I thought was so great about the interview that goes directly to what you were saying is that what Senator Coons was sharing was really that faith is the ground. It is the grounding of his political work. Now, I can already tell you there's probably some out there in the listening audience that are going, whoa, hang on a second, we've had enough of that. But he represents progressive faith so beautifully. And progressive faith says, look, this is what informs me. But I also know that there's other people out there who do not share my faith, or in fact may not share any faith at all. And so what I'm going to do as a political servant has to take all of those positions into consideration as well as I'm able. So not putting his faith agenda onto people, but asking people to understand that, you know, he grew up in this house with very engaged Christian parents, and not engaged in a way that went out there and boasted it in the world. But, you know, he talks about the Vietnamese refugee family that was a part of his church community. He thought all church communities had that. He didn't know there was anything different. Nobody made a big deal about it, you know. But that does very much form his faith. Like, faith without works ain't worth spit.
Yeah. Yep.
So I just appreciate, I just wanted to put that out there, because
one thing you said I want to explore, because it rubs my fur kind of against the grain. So So we're not going to build a bridge. Let's explore
disagreeing for good.
Disagreeing for good. So You frame the perspective of being able to, as Senator Kuntz does, come into the public square with conviction, his own faith convictions, and while at the same time welcoming plural perspectives and recognizing that there is a diversity, that we live in a plural culture. And you characterize that as progressive. And that word rubs my fur the wrong way, and I want to try to articulate why. Here's what I think's at stake if we use the word progressive to describe this, which is we're saying that I fear that we're saying that it's only a limited perspective that is open to plurality. And I want to say, I want to take that argument directly to its roots and challenge those who think that it's weak or progress or just progressive or just liberal, like the secular liberal perspective that's open to pluralism. No, I want to challenge those who believe that and say, no, your faith, our faith, calls us to be in dialogue and to learn and to be humble enough to learn from others.
Okay. I don't disagree yeah. with that. And it's a matter of who you're talking to, where your audience is, and how long people are going to pay attention.
Yeah, that's good.
The faster way in for all of those liberals who, you know, Senator Kuntz talks about in his interview about how painful his time was, for example, at Yale when he had, you know, classmates and roommates that, you know, just because he applied to the divinity school or he was engaged in a prayer group, became really hostile.
Right.
Towards him. And you know, I think for those folks, it's like, get the word progressive in there up front. Okay. So that you at least get their attention and then you can kind of get past that.
Thank you. That's interesting. That's interesting to me.
But I don't disagree with your position because I do, you know, Jesus was Jewish, okay? So we're already moving into a plurality, you know, right from the get-go, which is something that yeah. again, many Christians don't have a full appreciation for. Jesus did not come, did not live his life in ministry with an aim to establish a new religion. Yeah. That's just kind of how it played out, because as the Jews who believed Jesus was the Messiah tried to come back to their temples, they were driven out. Yeah.
Thank you. That's really an interesting point and helps me understand and learn how the word progressive could be of value. And it calls to mind how important it is. I think you're exactly right. Who are you talking to mm-hmm. and what language do they speak? So that's, yeah, thank you for that.
But, and I also appreciate your grounding it back, you know, in theology, because I so often will go to the political. And you often do hang in there on the theological, which is what makes the conversation so rich.
Yeah, you know, and there's one other observation to make about that, which is, you know, I'm continually saying we need to start with the theological and the moral and then see what politics follows from that. And I try to exaggerate that to make the point mm-hmm. that we often do the opposite. But the reality is that we're real human beings and our politics and our theology or our politics and our vision of human flourishing are always interpenetrating each other as we think about these things.
I wish that were true. I wish that was true, but I have to say 24 years in parish ministry has dropped me at the door of an experience that cannot be denied, which is that there are people who want us pastors to rewrite the Bible so that it jives with their politics. And very often people who call themselves Christians support policies and things that are anything but.
Yeah.
And I think that's where those who are on the political liberal spectrum and for whom religion, faith, you know, spirituality doesn't play a role. Perhaps they're humanists or They may be secular humanists. They may be, you know, ethicists, that for them, they see too many Christians out there, you know, saying one thing in church and then doing another thing in the public square. And it looks hypocritical. And it is, in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, it would be nice if our politics and our theology could line up. But man, there's so much bad theology out there that.
Yeah. My point wasn't so much that
they line up, they intertwine.
That there's hypocrisy, but because if you'd ask that person, they would say their theology and their politics align.
Their theology and their politics, just wait for us to preach something on Sunday that rubs them politically.
Exactly.
And it's like, I'm not going to argue this based on politics. You need to know that. I'm your minister. We can talk about it from a faith perspective, but I'm not going to argue politics in church. I'm just not going to do it.
One of the things that Senator Kuntz brings up is the importance of conversation, which is a value of the S1 Project and the What in God's Name podcast. Chain, I was just curious about your reaction to some of this, but he talks about his relationship with Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, who, of course, is no longer in the Senate. He resigned, or he didn't resign. He decided not to seek reelection in Arizona. But Jeff Flake is a Mormon, and Senator Kuntz talks about just getting to know Jeff Flake and how they disagreed on lots of policy questions, but could share a common grounding in their faith. And he simply talks about how conversation and relationship are so important. Of course, he's talking about the context of the U.S. Senate and how it's in developing those relationships that real work can happen.
But that all happens in the context of a prayer group.
Yes.
There is apparently this bipartisan prayer group, and they get together, and it is, you know, not dissimilar from a 12-step meeting in the sense that, you know, what you see here, who you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how, you know, you can't punch someone. It's harder to punch somebody in the face, metaphorically, you know, with a good piece of policy. Once you've sat down, you've kind of gotten to know him. The subject matter came up again at the end of the interview when a student was asking about structural changes necessary to the Senate. Because apparently, once upon a time, they used to do all these bipartisan lunches, which they don't do anymore. They didn't travel home every weekend, you know, so they spent a lot more time together. And here we begin to get at another value of the S1 Project, and that is the value of relationship, mm-hmm. and value of knowing people and understanding where they're coming from, which takes the heat down a little bit.
Yeah. So much of how we are relating with each other in our culture has to do with dehumanizing the other, and Senator Kuntz talks a lot about that in this interview.
And this I really appreciated, because he talked about, you know, how when you know praying with people and you're sharing personal stories, things that you know are not going to leave the room, you know, it becomes much more difficult to just kind of go after people in the way that we're all getting really accustomed to seeing on the floor of the House and the Senate. But he also talked about, you know, he struggles to reconcile himself with some of the people in there. So, you know, we're not suggesting that, you know, people have to, you know, sip some kind of Kool-Aid and everybody's holding hands and singing hymns on a 24/7 basis. There will be people you disagree with. There will be people whose core values are things that you cannot get on board with, you cannot align yourself with in any way, shape, or form, but that doesn't mean we have to villainize the person who holds them.
So that leads me to something I continue to puzzle about. And Jim Wallace says this in the interview, it's almost an aside hard to catch, and it's because it's quick. He says, in the context of certain kinds of disagreement, he says there are certain, he doesn't, it's, this is not an exact quote, but he juxtaposes the times when reconciliation with those you disagree with is appropriate, that recognizing those times, as opposed to times when resistance is what's called for. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. to me, this gets at really something very pointed about where we are as a society and as a culture and as a polity. When do we seek to reconcile with the people we disagree with? And when is that not appropriate? When is resistance the more appropriate, the more moral, the more theologically grounded way to go?
So interesting that you raise that question, because in the Christian calendar, we're in the season of Lent, and there is a reading, I believe was last weekend's reading, about Jesus flipping the tables over. There is a time where we have to say, absolutely not. I think the difference is, and I'm thinking back on the interview we did with Kathleen McTeague all those years ago, to resist in faith looks, sounds, and feels very different. Let me not limit it to faith. Let me say humility has got to play a really big role here. You know, humbly, I cannot move from this position. Humbly, I cannot. I hear you. I get you. I understand where you're coming from, but I have got to stand here and say no to this. This past week, there was a young man who set himself on fire out in front of the Israeli consulate. And I remember as a little child growing up and seeing pictures of the Buddhist monk who did the same in the face of the Vietnamese War. And I thought that was just insane as a little kid. Now I look at his actions and I think, my God, you know, he definitely got people's attention. I mean, I'm not recommending this. I'm not, you know, but he believed enough in what he was saying that he was willing to do this horrific thing. And as crazy as some of us may find that, for those of us who do profess Jesus Christ as someone worthy of our attention, whose life and ministry is worthy of our emulation, you know, this is a guy who went to the cross, in my opinion. Some will say it was preordained, or God brought him here to die on the cross, he was sacrificed for his sins. It's never been a piece of my theology. He was, in my view, he was put to death by the Roman authorities as an insurrectionist. And he was willing to die as an insurrectionist rather than back down because he believed in what he was standing for. Alexei Navalny, who was murdered by the Russian government 2 weeks ago, another one who resisted, did it humbly, did it passionately and kindly, but absolutely took a line and said, no more of this. This is where the line is in the sand, and we cannot have this. So there's a humility when it's being done from, or let me say that when humility is present in your resistance, it looks and feels very different than when there isn't. When there isn't, it gets very shrill and very self-righteous and can be as much of a propellant, if you will, than it is as an attractor.
Thank you for that. That helps me think about this. The humility piece is, yeah. Yeah, I think you've characterized it well. I don't need to say more about it.
It's the kernel. It's the alpha and the omega. It's the center where it all has to come from, is some acknowledgement that, you know, I may be wrong.
Yeah.
I may be wrong.
Yeah.
But as best as I can discern it, this is where I think we ought to be, and I can't back away from this thing.
Yeah.
I cannot and I will not back away from racism or misogyny, you know, anti-LGBTQ, ableism. Like, I have to call that stuff out. How I call it out and where I strike a stand.
Well, so if I may, further reflection on what you said, your three examples, self-immolation, Alexei Navalny, and what was the third?
Jesus? That guy?
Yeah, yeah. That's the one, yes. And Jesus, okay, they all died, which is sobering. I mean, to me, that you might, in this very moment, if I ever get to the sentence I want to say, use those as examples of, I mean, that's humility, in a way. One step short of death is the willingness to suffer in your resistance. So I guess what I'm saying is, it doesn't have to go all the way to the point of death, but resistance in this kind of spirit that you're talking about seems to be a spirit of, because it's humble, the willingness to suffer rather than inflict pain on the other.
Mm-hmm. Servant mentality.
Shana, that's hard.
Servant mentality? Yeah, it is hard. To be subservient to an idea, to bind yourself to it.
Right.
You know, is something that many on the left really resist. Where liberalism comes off the tracks for me is that place where, you know, we're not going to be bound to some higher ideal. How dare you even suggest it? But it was interesting because in the context of the Jim Wallace, Senator Coons conversation, it sort of came up a little bit when they started talking about why it is that Democrats don't discuss faith.
Yes.
And you and I have gone down this road in a number of different ways, but, you know, they came back to it. And Senator Coons was talking about, you know, how many people are so painfully aware of the negative impact that religion has had on so many people, either directly or indirectly, and or because they don't know anything about religion. They only know what they've been told. What they've been told is at best incomplete and at worst pretty slanted towards the perspective of the person who was telling. They themselves have not had experience of faith, nor have they had experience of faith with persons in their family who were faithful people who they might have admired. So they just don't know anything about it. And so someone comes in and says, you know, look at all the horrible things that you know, religion has done. And so their answer is no faith. Then that's the answer to that, as opposed to good faith. Like, that there is such a notion that there is good faith and it does exist. And there are people out here doing it. But, you know, as I've said on this show any number of times, I think the good Christians got quiet and lost ground. And we've ceded now, like the Bible, Jesus, Christianity. Oh, that all belongs to the Republicans and to the right wing. And people on the left do this all the time. Obviously, the students at Yale do it. Many politicians do it. They're going to be very quiet about their faith because they don't want to freak people out rather than explain it. And, I mean, go back to some of the interviews Pete Buttigieg gave on his faith. And, man, you know, they were great. I mean, he really had a handle on what this progressive Christianity looks like, how one can be a Christian without seeking to impose it on everyone else, but still allow it to be a source for you. There are so many liberals, political liberals out there who they've disappeared us. And, you know, there was one example during the marriage equality struggle that happened nationwide. Man, churches, there were churches all over that trying to get their own membership on board to embrace people in the LGBTQ plus community. And I'm one person who believes that Churches who, by the way, were willing to come out as open and affirming or welcoming and affirming, whatever their particular nomenclature was, did so not only at the risk of being dismembered from their various associations, many of them actually were disfellowshipped from their associations. So church people, and Christians in particular, took huge risks, as did members in synagogues and members in mosques across the country. Yet, when you hear leadership in the LGBTQ plus community talk about that struggle, they never even mention us. And the only time they mention religious people is to cast light on those who were against their agenda. So they inadvertently give them more power and disappear us. And, you know, this is a theme. It is ongoing. You and I have talked about it on the show any number of times, and it came up again in this interview, yeah. I think, quite clearly.
Yeah, Chris Kuntz was clear about how he had blowback against his blowback from secular liberals against
at
his
Yale.
At Yale.
Yeah.
Against his what? Desire to go to divinity school.
His desire to be part of a prayer group.
Yeah. Shana, the last thing I had, maybe you have more, but the last thing I had, it was at the very end of the conversation, and Chris Kuntz is just very clear. He says, American democracy is in trouble. And I want to go there for a second just to say that for the S1 Project, my sense of what we're doing and our mission, and certainly, of course, our essential question for this year, the moral foundations of democracy. We can't rely on just knowing about the procedures and structures of government. We can't rely on that to simply carry forward along the way. It's my belief that we have to uncover the moral, like, what is the moral vision of a democracy? Why ought we to desire it? Mm-hmm. And the conversation that Chris Kuntz has with Jim Wallace, the conversations that you and I have on What in God's Name podcast, and of course the conversations that we aim to foster in our educational initiatives, they're not always directly related to the moral foundations of democracy, but
we're trying to always seed moral.
It's there.
Yeah, we're always trying to seed that. You know, we're trying to put down good seed so that we can come up with a crop of democracy.
Yeah.
You know,
to grow that
crop. And I think first and foremost, a democracy requires the ability of all of us who would be citizens of it to be able to hold multiple and sometimes conflicting ideas together.
It's just so necessary,
you know,
to be able to do that.
So if we're villainizing one another because we disagree, or we're silencing one another, or we're disappearing people, mm-hmm. or shutting them down and never even taking the time to get to know them. Like, so why is that prayer group important to you, Senator Kuntz? Or, you know, at the time it would have been Chris. why is that prayer group? What are you getting? Without ever taking the time to know, well, I have an opinion on religion, and if you're a religious person, then you're... Oh my God, folks, slow down. And, you know, before they got to that, he was talking about when one student asked him what his recommendations were, and he said, you know, put down your cell phones.
Yes, yeah.
And I love that because it's like, yeah, how about we put down our cell phones and re-engage in conversation face to face with all of the pauses and the being able to see one another and look deeply into one another's eyes and perhaps find their communion.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's a theological vision of encounter. Of encounter with the divinity in the person that you're with. It's incarnational. Like,
yeah,
We are embodied.
Absolutely.
Anything else, Shana?
Stay curious, Chris.
Oh, well, be curious. Oh, wait, you already said that. Stay curious.
Go deep.
why don't you just do them all? I can't.
Yes.
And shine a light.
You have been listening to What in God's Name, the podcast of the S1 Project. You can find out more about What in God's Name and the S1 Project by going to our website at s1project.org.
.org. You can become a generous donor on Patreon to support our ongoing work. Just go to patreon.com. Shayna, I have deeply enjoyed this conversation with you about Senator Kuntz and faith in public life. And we will put this YouTube video, the link will be in our show notes. Shayna, great to be with you.
Always great to be with you, Chris. And I'm thinking about moving to Delaware.